Welcome, everybody, to the latest mission of the Union Federation podcast here on both the Fandom Podcast Network and the BQN Network. Of course, our continuing mission is to let you know about all the happenings in the Star Trek universe and the Orville universe. Of course, you know what? I cannot take on these missions alone. I have a top-notch crew with me, but though it's a little short-handed, I think Kevin is off messing with some supercomputers and stuff like that. Haley, she mined one too many of those mining rock orbs, and I think one too few nightmares. But luckily, I found out that Romulan ale just blows away any effects of those mining orbs. So that means, of course, the lovely Miss Amy Nelson, ship's counselor, ship's holographic captain, is here with me to discuss both episodes 3 and 4 of Lower Decks this week. I am excited, Amy. Lower Decks has been so much fun.
It has been. And my goodness, such the variety. Like, the themes and tones and feel of each episode is sort of unique, and I'm liking it.
Yes, it has been. This season has been off to an interesting start. But Amy, I didn't put this in the notes because I just realized that between this episode and our last episode, Star Trek Day happened.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It has been a couple weeks. Did you get to watch any of it?
I didn't get to watch it live, but I caught a lot of the videos afterwards. You'll have to forgive me. I've been stuck in a last minute Ferengi procrastination taxes. It's Latinum deference. Not a fun thing to calculate, but there was some interesting news to come out of it. We did get to see a new trailer for Picard. Have you seen this, Amy?
No, I haven't. I'm bad. Yeah.
No. It's quite all right, because I know you've been a little busy yourself. It's all right, good. But we did get an announcement. Picard will premiere February 16th of 2023. You need to go find that new trailer, Amy, because we get a lot of Next Gen crew in it, and it's very exciting. We even see, I'm going to say, Crusher with a phaser rifle. That's all I'm going to say.
Right. Yes, I have been hearing people talk about it. So I have been, you know, getting caught up with that way. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. And we got the Prodigy release date in October 26th.
Yeah, I am very excited for that. Prodigy is one of these shows that I wasn't real sure about because of the Nickelodeon and how much for kids. But I am so intrigued by the characters in Prodigy, and the production value on Prodigy, the animation is so beautiful. And obviously they're bringing in Admiral Janeway in the second half of the first season of Prodigy. So my interest is peaked. We're kind of in the middle of a Janeway renaissance right now, aren't we?
Yes,
Amy?
Very much so. Seeing her at STLV and all the hubbub, and, you know, sort of the talk with Chakotay and what's that going to be involved with, like, very excited to have Janeway back in the mix of things.
Yeah, I am excited to see what they're going to do there. There was a snippet of a new episode of Strange New Worlds that came out during Star Trek Day 2. Little scene with Ortegas, and it was set up, I don't know what episode it's going to be from, but she shows how excited she is. She's finally going to be able to go on an away mission off the ship, and she's really excited about that. And then something happens where she has to stay on and pilot the ship because she's the only one who can pilot the Enterprise through this, like, asteroid field that's developed or something like that. So, and then it kind of cuts off there. Strange New Worlds will be out sometime in 2023. We don't know when yet, but it's my favorite Star Trek. Pike is probably my favorite captain as it stands right now, and it's not really that close, and I cannot wait for the return of Strange New Worlds. But Amy, I do want to ask you real quick, because I thought it was very interesting. We had Star Trek Day, and it was about this time last year we found out that Discovery was coming out, and Discovery was kind of coming out around over the holidays last year it came out. The only things we know about Discovery right now is that it will be not until 2023, and it's cut down from a 13-episode season to a 10-episode season, and they just finished filming on it, which seems strange to me because I felt like they started filming even before Strange New World Season 2 started filming, and that's already done filming. So I'm wondering, Amy, are we looking at Season 5 maybe being set up to be the last season of Discovery?
That's exactly what I was thinking when you told me they cut it down to 10. I mean, we are used to having 13. However, that was sort of the general feel of a season back in 2017, 2016, when Discovery first came out. So are they just changing the model to make it fit more of current streaming, or is this the gradual decrease in discovery?
Yeah, I'm kind of curious about this, and which leads me to another question, Amy, because this is a question I've been actually talking with a lot of different people in the podcast community about, because in some ways it does feel of late we maybe have too much of a good thing because we're just so overloaded with options right now. I was talking about, we've got two major fantasy shows on right now with Lord of Rings, Rings of Power, and the return of Game of Thrones with House of Dragon. We've got, there's just a lot. We've had a Star Trek almost every week for a year now. It looks like the way it's shaping up, once Prodigy ends, we're probably going to have a little break over the holidays. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, because I think if you're going to take a break, that's the time to do it, because people are focusing on a lot of different things over the holiday. We all love Trek, but are we ready for a little Trek break here, Amy? Are we ready to maybe go and have the holidays without Trek, in like where we are making time to watch a new Trek show? Or do we need to keep the Trek train running here so we have a Trek every week still?
The answer is, for me, always let's have more Trek. I love when Trek is on in the summer and around vacation and holiday times, because then I actually get to watch it with my family, right? I live by myself. So when I go on vacation, I get to watch it with my Trek family. Or if I go home, I get to watch it with my real family. Like, I really want to have Trek on. And I wish that they wouldn't double up on the dropping the episodes, right? So from what it sounds like, that there's going to be an overlap of what we've got, Lower Decks and Prodigy, by 1 week.
Probably by 1 week, because I think we have 10 episodes of Prodigy in this next go around, and that would put us through.
But see, that's starting in October, and we're still going to be having Lower Decks. So
I think we have one week of overlap is what what's going to happen with those two. So which means you're probably going to have Prodigy running through most of December, till at least about mid December, I think.
Right. Yeah.
So I think Prodigy will end probably like a week or two before Christmas. And then I'm going to guess that we probably won't have new Trek until
February.
And in some ways that makes a little bit of sense, because there's so much competition with other things going on in January. Then we got the holidays. January is a very heavy sports month. You've got college football, you've got NFL playoffs, a lot of things, and some other things going on. But yeah, I think we've gotten a little spoiled too. We've gotten used to a Trek in a weekly basis. And then you throw in the Orville as well, and we still don't know what the fate of the Orville is. So it's a lot of interesting things. So I would, if I'm Paramount Plus, I'm just going to throw this idea out to you. Maybe you can't do it this year. It's probably too short notice, but I would love a Star Trek Christmas special.
Oh,
to me, Strange New World screams it. I would love to see an episode where Pike tries to do Christmas or like a holiday or something like that, like in his cabin down on Earth, and things just go weird. Have fun with it. And if you're going to do it, it feels like the Strange New Worlds crew would be the ones to do it, or a Lower Decks Christmas special. Because that would be some crazy.
So when you said Christmas special, in my mind, I automatically went to yes. Let's have that. But I was more along the lines of getting the actors and like having just a Star Trek special that way, so we can get our classical, the 90s, our classic Trek actors and the new ones, and just sort of wishing everyone a happy holiday. I want to see that more than I want to see holidays in Star Trek. I actually like that we don't get holidays. We get very few birthdays. We had that Memorial Day episode in Strange New Worlds. But I like that we're getting away from the secular holidays in Star Trek. So if they did a Christmas special, I would want it just the actors and not embedded in a show.
That makes sense. I think you could even not have it be Christmas, but I can see the Lower Decks crew going to some place that has, that's a new planet that has some oddball holiday or something like that, and just having fun with that. That would be kind of interesting too. But come on, Pike's going to put out a serious Christmas feast. I'm just saying.
Yes.
So I think I just, that's all I want to see. I want to see what the what Captain Pike's Christmas table looks like. Apparently Stripesy wants to see it too.
Yes.
My personal Tribble is joining the podcast for the evening. So yes. I apologize. So, well, with that out of the way, I think it's time to activate that quantum drive and let's talk some Lower Decks. Now, of course, before we dive into the next two episodes of Lower Decks, I gotta hit that red button to give you this. We are going to be diving deep into these two episodes of Lower Decks and having a lot of fun and hopefully not too many nightmares, but and maybe not too many distracting fantasies either, Amy. I don't know, because that brings us to our first away mission. Away mission number one, Lower Decks Season 3, Episode 3, Mining the Mines Mines. You say that three times fast and I'll give you a bonus. Amy, would you care to give us the captain's log, or should I say the Lower Decks log? No Boimler version required this week.
Right. Yeah. What color is my hair, really?
I want to say pink. I'm going pink for Boimler.
Pink, yes. On a planet with silicon-based life, who are called the Scrubble, a human scientist is taken for granted by an illusion that is clearly taken from his own mind. The Cerritos joins with a Carlsbad, a fellow California-class ship, to help pack up the outpost, leading to rivalry when three ensigns from the Carlsbad treat Mariner, Boimler, and Rutherford with disdain. Meanwhile, Tendi begins her bridge crew training by working at the elbow of Captain Freeman, who is trying to keep a diplomatic relations between the colonists and the Scrubble from breaking down.
Okay, Amy, I'm going to admit, I had a lot of fun with this episode. This episode's a little warped at times, but it's everything. This is the kind of episode that makes you realize Lower Decks is, it's different from any kind of other Trek we've got. I got to know, what were your first reactions to this episode, Amy?
Well, those glowing globes, you know, the Scrubble that they were collecting, I was getting so many different vibes. Like at the very beginning when the scientist was looking over and I was like, you know, and it was sort of this big rock and I was like, oh, maybe it's the Horta. And then it's this mind controlling device. And so I was like, oh, maybe it's from TNG, the Last Outpost with the Ferengi controlling, you know, that sphere that controlled Picard's mind. So I sort of got those vibes from it. But yeah, what did you think of it?
I'm going to be honest. I really wish Kevin was here because I would really like to get his thoughts on this. Amy, I'm not sure if you have or not. Have you ever seen the animated movie Heavy Metal based off of the classic cult fall? In the beginning of the movie, the villain of the movie Heavy Metal is this glowing green globe called the Loch Nahr. And how this episode of Lower Decks opens with this, I'm like, oh, they're paying a little bit of tribute to Heavy Metal here. And I loved it. And next time Kevin is on, I'm going to have to ask him about this because Kevin knows exactly what I'm talking about. And I would really like to see if he got that kind of vibe from it as well. But no, I love this episode because for a couple of reasons. One, I thought it was so fun seeing everybody's different fantasies and how they played out, especially with like, I thought Mariners obviously was very interesting. Rutherford, I loved the fact that Rutherford and Boimler were so just what you absolutely expect, and Mariners was just not what you would expect at all. But what I loved too was finding out that the Cerritos has a rep, and it's not what you think, what they all think it is. It's totally different. It's like, well, you may not be the Enterprise, but you are the talk of the California class. And I love that. I love that whole dynamic. And I love that you're starting to get a little bit of respect for the Cerritos and its crew that are within Starfleet.
So I'm just going to throw this out there because I was thinking about it as I was rewatching it again before coming on. And I was like, okay, we've always like Enterprise. That's the best of the best. It's the flagship. It's where all the, you know, the best skilled, smartest go. And We did get accustomed to, you know, everyone solving problems because they're the best of the best. So with lower decks, I was like, this is going to be great to see how they can how they can work with not the best of the best. So I was enjoying that aspect. And then this episode is like, well, now they're going to be the best of the California ships. So we're getting the same thing. It's the same formula. And I'm not sure if we really want to go down that road with lower decks being the best of the best.
See, the aspect of it here that to me, even though like it's getting a rep in the California class, they make it very clear to say, no, but you're still not at that enterprise level or that level of Federation. You're still, you might be the best of the best. Of the
California class, yeah.
That's like saying you're the best of the best of the economy class. Mm-hmm. And so there's still that aspect. And I don't necessarily even think that it's that they're the best of the best. They've just managed to get themselves in the craziest situations normally a California class probably wouldn't get itself end up being in. So I'm not so quite sure about that. And you add in the fact that a lot of it is probably through the Starfleet gossip line. So how much has it been blown up out of proportion with that? So I found that interesting too, especially when you consider that they all thought, you know, that this other crew was just, they're on point. They're, you know, and it plays up on what Mariner's been going through with the season so far of having to be supervised by not her mom. And she's having to learn to, and you really see her wanting to be like, we've got to prove this. We've got to prove this. And I think that's a great continuation of her character and what they're exploring with her character in this season, as far as she's kind of like becoming a little bit more not Starfleet. She still has her own way of doing things, but she's also like learning a respect for Starfleet that she may not have had initially when the show first started.
Yeah, I think she definitely is learning a lot more about Starfleet and finding her place where she can still be unique but yet fit in.
Yeah. Well, we had a fun few continuity nods in this as well. When Mariner asks what the Cerritos has done to be infamous, Boimler and Rutherford mention virtually everything that happened in season two. However, Rutherford doesn't mention anything from season one because he's lost all his memories from them. So great way to be on top of what you're doing. I love this too. One of the fear monsters appears to be a giant rosin monster, likely alluding to Boimler's hatred for them from the season premiere.
Yeah. Oh, yes. The raisin debacle. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. I can understand that. And then after being restored from petrification, Stevens recounts how he brushed off the doctor's claim that he was brain dead for several minutes by saying he saw a koala on top of a black mountain. This references the cosmic entity running gag and the description of how Shax came back to life.
Oh, yeah.
I love the fact that you've got a little bit of tie-ins, and that's one thing that the Lower Decks really does do well. They really they got to have some editors there and some grips and things like that. They're just like, they have the Star Trek dictionaries in front of them just to make sure they're getting everything right. I'm like, yep, they're doing something well. Now, Amy, too, we had a few guest voices in here. Susan Gibney, Dr. Leah Brahms makes an appearance in this episode.
Yeah,
I had a great reaction to that, and I'm like, of course, that's what Rutherford's fantasy would be.
I just hope that she's okay and like leans into the whole Leah Brahms sexy engineer trope.
Yeah,
you know that she's really having fun with it. Because I'm like, this is one note Leah Brahms.
Well, it makes me wonder, though, is how much did Geordi's holodeck program get put out into more Starfleet libraries and what he realized? Oops. Rutherford, what'd you do? A few other things. We had Lauren Lapkus as Ensign Jennifer Sharan. Ben Rogers was Steve Stevens. Carl Tart was Ensign Cordy. Paul F. Tompkins was Ensign Young. We had Baron Vaughn as Captain Mayer, and Kari Wahlgren, who's done a lot of voice work in anime and is a pretty well-known voice actress, as Ensign Kearns. I found this very interesting with this these new crews that they kind of came up with, these new ensigns too, how they made them appear like they were the no-nonsense ensigns, and how fast they were working. And we thought we were just going to get this one trope, and then they just completely turned it around. But I also found it very interesting that you had this young captain who's on apparently the fast track with Captain Freeman. And I love that dynamic and how that ended up playing out, Amy.
Yeah, that was really fun. This is the one, I'm sorry, I might be getting him. Is this the one where you take the...
Yeah, the pyramid, the stone pyramid.
Yeah, the pyramid, yeah. And again, it's like this seniority, and here's Freeman sort of at the top of that seniority. So again, sort of going into what I was saying before, but that respect going back and forth, I thought was so funny. But I want to ask you, like, what changed her mind? Because at the very end, she's like, you know, these little trinkets do, you know, have importance to a captain and stuff like that. And I'm like, what changed her mind?
I don't think it was anything that changed her mind. Is that she came to her senses and ego got out of the way. Mm. You know, she was feeling threatened by this younger hotshot captain who had made a few snide remarks to get off there on the wrong foot. Then you turn out, oh, this whole thing was a scam that they were trying to get secrets to sell to other classified Federation secrets to sell to people, the rivals of the Federation. So I think it was kind of a little bit of an ego check, but then you still have that little shot at the end. Oh, well, I kept the bigger piece.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, but I think it's these little dynamics in this show that I think work so well. So
agreed. Now
we also, you know, get our input over from Den of Geek. Our John K. Kirk wrote a little article about episode 3 and talked about some of the Easter eggs and shout outs. I'm going to dive into this a little bit. The alliterably titled Mining the Mind's Minds taps into the lone space outpost on a foreign planet. As one of the influences directing this week's episode of Star Trek Lower Decks, it also recalls the helpless and mind-numbingly boring outpost scientists that the Enterprise and other vessels throughout Star Trek Lower have had to either rescue, protect, or otherwise frustratingly work with to accomplish a mutual goal. Amy, come on. I actually have... I agree with Ransom in this episode. Why do they have to do it the complicated way?
That is pretty funny because there's so many times where it's like, well, we have to go check on this scientist, where we have to go check on this scientist. I love it.
Yeah, now I got to admit too, I kind of like the name of Scrubble as in the alien race. I thought that was a little fun. I might as well just been Scrabble. I mean,
yeah, it's a fun word and, you know, almost tribble, you know, scrub. Yeah, like it.
Yeah. Mike McMahon was quoted in this article. I really wanted to do one that felt like a classic Trapped in a Cave planetary episode. You know those sets, Star Trek Lower Deck showrunner Mike McMahon says. McMahon is referring to the numerous cave settings used throughout Trek history, like the ones in the TOS episode The Devil in the Dark or Next Generation's Silicon Avatar, even the set for the Klingon penal colony, Rurapinthe, from the film Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, comes to mind. Their similarity to each other and why they seem so familiar is because that they were all filmed on Paramount Stage 16, and that sense of history was important to man. Were you feeling that a little, Amy?
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, Mike McMahon is on it. He also tells... talk more about another of the episode's classical themes, the relationship between Starfleet officers and scientists. To quote Mike, we also wanted to push something that I came up with in season 1, the Lower Deckers and the people in Starfleet. If they ever happen to wash out of Starfleet, they end up having to become an outpost scientist, which is the most boring gig that you could ever get. Which, if you think about it, it's true. Federation outpost scientists definitely haven't been the most exciting of characters in the franchise. After all, think about guys like Roger Corby from the TOS episode, What Are Little Girls Made Of? Or we really have no idea what Christine Chapel ever saw in him, and it turns out he wasn't even real. Not to mention guys like Dr. Apgar at the Tauga station in Star Trek The Next Generation episode, A Matter of Perspective. There's a guy that had some real self-esteem issues.
Oh, yeah.
Also, the distrust and apathy between scientists and Starfleet that we saw in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, or the Star Trek Next Generation episode, Force of Nature, is a familiar theme in the franchise. The divide is driven home this episode with Jack Ransom, of course voiced by the wonderful Jerry O'Connell, rant about how the crew of the USS Cerritos has to clean up all the mess of outpost scientists because they're weirdos. In closing with that too, he goes on to say, I wanted something that was that kind of underlined the unfunness to the audience of being on an outpost scientist. McMahon says, and in that regard, mining the minds is a tremendously fun success. Really, who does want scientific outpost duty, Amy? I'm saying.
I guess some scientists, but you know, crazy scientists usually goes before that.
I mean, for me, Amy, when you're talking like crazy scientific experiments and just really messing things up in the Star Trek universe in a way, I still go back to Wrath of Khan and search for Spock with the Genesis torpedo. That really caused a ton of havoc. And
absolutely,
you know, I think that one is up there. What about you? He mentions a few different episodes in there. Is there any scientific outpost that you were like, yeah, we really didn't need to have this problem in our hands?
Well, there's so many. I mean, even in Lessons, you know, with the heat waves of walls of flame that, you know, the weather outpost, I can't remember, yeah. In Lessons. Anyways, Dr. Nella Darren, and there's just so many fun examples. Oh, the one is to know him is to love him because he wanted to transfer his consciousness. And, you know, that was, again, another outpost with a crazy scientist doctor who was, you know, wanting to die. And I mean, not wanting to die. So, yeah, that's pretty, very tropey. I hadn't even considered that. But now, you know, hearing those and then thinking of all the others, I'm like, man, there are a lot. Also the one like the cave, like mm-hmm. there's a lot in there, like, the final mission,
yeah, you know,
with Beverly or not Beverly,
with Wesley
Crusher. Yeah. And Picard. And then also like Time Zero, that whole cave, you know, part of that episode, like it's awesome.
So the truth of the matter is if you actually listen to a real captain's log from Star Trek, Stardate 18.961, we're off to save another group of weirdo scientists. You get the feeling that there's a lot of California class that end up having to do that kind of work, you know? And it's like the Enterprise gets sent, oh, well, you're the closest by. They might have really messed something up. We need to send you over that way.
That's why I loved the beginning, or, you know, the captain's log, where it's like, the recap of all this amazing thing that, you know, a ship like the Enterprise would be doing. And now we're coming back. I loved it. And yeah, hope they do that more.
So Amy, before we close out of this particular away mission, any other thoughts or things you want to bring up from this episode that stood out for you?
I liked the, sort of the competition aspect, which we will see in the next episode. So I'm seeing that as a running theme. But then also, again, just how it flips, where you think the competition is negative, and it's like, oh, no, we're like trying to impress you. So that's a good flip.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, because that's a good point, because it's something that I feel like we've talked about a little bit, even with like the last episode of the Orville, when the Orville explains Trek better than Trek explains Trek sometimes. And we talk about, oh, everybody's fulfilled by their job that they have. But you still have that sense of competition, because I think the human nature is you always want to advance. You always want to improve your station in life. So even though you might not be getting rewarded by something in a monetary sense, or even in a like, oh, hey, here, good job, here you get this thing, you're still a little bit competitive because you still want to move up your position within Starfleet. So you're still driven by that, not just by the fulfillment of, hey, I'm on this path of doing something I want to do. That's one of the things I really liked about Lower Decks, because I really think that's something they've actually brought to the forefront a little bit, that these guys are all ensigns. They still want to advance. And there's a desire and there's an effort to advance. Mm-hmm. I don't, other than a few times, maybe with Crusher and a few things here and there, you really didn't see that, I felt like, in the other Star Trek shows. I don't ever really, the only other major character I feel like that they ever really did anything with that was with Nog in Deep Space Nine.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm liking the fact that we are seeing a little bit of that side of Starfleet too, the path of advancement and the path of wanting to grow within Starfleet. So, you know, we, for all those years we screamed of like a Starfleet Academy type show, you're kind of, in a way, it's kind of getting a little bit of that here in Lower Decks too, Amy.
Right. Yeah, I think Ensign Harry Kim would agree with your statement that they did not advance people too much in classic Trek.
Well, you know, just because when, I mean, it's either, someday we need that scene in Lower Decks. It's of Ensign Kim and the transporter tech from the season premiere. You know, just like they never advanced. They just stay. Ensign Kim and the transporter tech.
Well, and even like in Discovery, we've got Tilly who, you know, has that aspiration to advance and become captain and, you know, go through. So, yeah, I think they're paying attention to that a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's a nice addition, but we are going to transport out of this particular away mission and take a little break and let you know what else is going on around the Fandom Podcast Network.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. The Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
And we are back. Hopefully you are enjoying listening to everything that is on the Fandom Podcast Network and also on the BQN Network, where their goal is to assimilate us all. But we are back for Away Mission 2, which means that we are talking about now episode 4 of season 3 of Lower Decks, Room for Growth. Miss Nelson, would you please be so kind as to give us the captain's log for this episode?
Yes. Captain Freeman is possessed by a D'Arcy mask and transforms the Cerritos into an ancient temple. After the credits, the engineering team has been working round the clock to untemple the ship and are stressed beyond belief. Freeman books a shore leave day for them on a spa ship, the Dove, only to find the engineers prefer to get back to work. While Rutherford is off on that plot, Boimler, Mariner, and Tendi hear about a quarters lottery. Apparently, 4 cabins have opened up on Deck 1. Tendi then overhears 3 ensigns from Delta Shift conspiring to hack the lottery and get themselves in. This is the impetus for the 3 of them to take... Take a circuit route through the ship in an attempt to hack it themselves.
Yeah, I snuck in a few big words in there. I apologize for that. Amy, first of all, that scum from Delta Shift, you can't trust them. You know, they're always messing around. They even mess around with the podcast. It's messy. Don't trust Delta Shift. And you did get rid of that ancient mask collection I told you that you couldn't have anymore, right?
No, I'm keeping that. Yeah. That's a good thing to have.
You do realize we only have so many temple conversions on our insurance policy here on the Union Federation.
So hey, do you know what is really cool about this episode that really I could not have planned it if I wanted to? But on the day this dropped, my episode of All Good Things, we were discussing masks.
Oh, there you go.
I'm not even kidding you. Oh my gosh. So that dropped on Thursday, and then we get this cold open for masks. Like, it was insane. It was just perfect timing. So I really like this cold open.
See, you can't trust Boimler. He always reads your podcasting notes.
Yeah.
So besides the mask time, which is very cool and very cool coincidence, what did you think? What were your first reactions to this episode, Amy?
So again, I felt similar to last week's because we've got this competition, and this time it's not between two different ships. It's between two different shifts, Delta and Beta. And then they finally get, you know, to the spot and they actually end up talking to each other and becoming friends. It's like, oh yeah, da da da. Look, we have so much in common. And then those, sneaky Delta shifts, they run through the door that only opened up once an hour. And it's like, you know what? That just goes to show this working environment. It is a job and there's going to be competition, and you just got to keep on, you know, sort of protect yourself and your crew. And it happens in all parts of your life. You know, and I just think it's so lovely to see that because it's so relatable.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree with everything you said there, Amy. But you know what my first impression was from this episode, Amy, is that Star Trek engineers are wired a whole different way. In our history of engineers, we have, of course, Scotty. We have, you know, Geordi. We've had Stamets, you know, just
Bellana.
Different engineers all over the place. And I saved this piece of news from earlier because I wanted to bring it up in this place, because we're about to add to our history of quirky engineers, because I don't know if you caught this or not. The Enterprise on Strange New Worlds is going to have a new chief engineer next year. And it is a legend. The legendary Carol Kane has been cast to play the new chief engineer on Star Trek Strange New Worlds.
Yes, I saw that and I was like, Carol Kane, are you insane? That is so awesome. I wonder if she's going to be our little Jet Reno comic relief, awesome, you know, good one-liner type of character.
But I think she will definitely follow the tradition of a little bit of a quirky engineer.
Yes.
So I intentionally saved that for this, but I thought this episode really did cover a couple of interesting points, is how much stress there actually is on our Starfleet crew, especially the engineering crew, because they probably are more tasked with things than any other department on a Starfleet vessel. You've got to think that is probably the highest stress environment outside of maybe the captain. And
well,
so,
yeah, because I think you're in charge of, you know, keeping the ship going and preparing everything for every away mission, right? So yeah, you are in every aspect. You're in shields, you're in weapons, you know, there's always something that engineering needs to do to help out the other departments. So I agree with you.
Yeah. Now I did find it fun. I liked the little day spa that they went to, that, what was it? The Dove.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the bands, and you have the engineers finding unique ways to make the bands look like they're not stressed, you know, slipping the cucumber underneath. And it turns out, what de-stresses an engineer? Fixing engineering problems.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, really? Just really? We're with that? Including, apparently, designing something to really fix the captain's stress problems.
Yeah, I need that machine.
Yeah, I was floating around in quadrant four right now, so you know, just send a shuttlecraft out, a little tractor beam, you're set to go.
Yeah. So now, I thought it was really good to, you know, talk about and have this discussion, whether it is, you know, in a funny comedy but to talk about stress and how it really can affect you. And, you know, we saw Captain Freeman, she was freaking out. Yeah, she had been, you know, controlled by a mask, and probably that was affecting her logical thinking. But yeah, everyone's under stress and it will affect how you perform. And so kudos for Lower Decks and Captain Freeman of even recognizing we need to de-stress, because let's get the ship going again.
Yeah. Now, I will say too, in this episode, I learned a little bit more about certain holodeck sessions than I really wanted to know about. keep those safety features engaged, please. That's all I'm saying.
Yes. And that funny line where Shax is like, you haven't even asked me about being dead. And she's like, oh, crybaby. And, you know, sort of.
Yeah. And then she's like, well, okay, fine. I'll finally tell you the story about how I lost my tail. And Tendi's like, wait, I want to hear this. So, again, that's Mike McMahon sneaking in a little bit of his crazy sense of humor, but I just really liked this episode, and I just thought it was fun. And I think it's one of these things with Lower Decks where they have these episodes where they're not necessarily anything to the bigger story, but they're just fun. And I love the fact too, Amy, that there is just some completely outrageous sections of the Cerritos. We have a section with dolphins in deep water, and now we have the Everglades in part of the underbelly of the Cerritos.
Yeah, they're coming up with some real crazy things. And I think it's sort of a nod to, you know, the blueprints that were created, and, you know, just have these random weird rooms. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a lot of fun. What's next? That's all, the anti-gravity room, which turned out to be the deflector room. I mean,
yeah, that low grav, and they were having so much fun. And what I liked about this episode is that everything, they were sort of scared. Oh, well, you go first, ladies first, you know, and every time they would go to a different section of the ship, it was a little bit scary, but then because they were together, it was fun and they enjoyed it. And so, like, I really thought that was the part, especially at the end. And I know I'm jumping, but, you know, when they're like, oh, but that means we wouldn't have been able to be together. And look at this fun time we had. And so, again, it was like this competition, but then it got flipped around where it's like, we enjoy being together. And I liked that a lot.
Even though they didn't realize they could have all just shared the room.
Yeah, that is, Kyle, you know, you have friends and it's like, yeah, we get along so well, but living with people is a completely different story.
It's still got to be better than four people in one room. It's still got to be better than what their current living conditions in the hallway are.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, at least you have a little, but then again, I'm not sure if living in a room with Mariner would be tolerable for long periods.
And Boimler screaming all the time? No, 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 no.
Well, speaking of Boimler, well, like we talked about last episode, the greatness that is the Lower Decks writing team of keeping storylines going. We saw the return of Bull Boimler in this episode.
Yes.
And Mariner's like, we got to put a stop to this.
Well, and then she's like, and, you know, we're not going to be together that long because, you know, Tendi's going to be going off in Rutherford and Boimler's going to be dead from being bold.
But I mean, I'm just glad it's the one pitfall of like the Next Generation and even the original series, where it's like, it was very rare we revisited something, especially in a season. So I really like the aspect of the fact that they are keeping these storylines going, and even in little ways, like with Rutherford's memory still being wiped, so he doesn't talk about anything from season one, things like that. So I just give them a lot of credit for that. I think it's a really wonderful thing. But we also have another Den of Geek article here by John K. Kirk, and I found something very interesting with this article when he talked about this episode this week. So I'm going to dive into this. It's always been clear to Star Trek fans that the heart of this franchise is the friendships it features. Whether it's Kirk, Spock, and McCoy, Trip and Malcolm, or Tom and Harry, it's those relationships that we celebrate in Star Trek, and that's what this week's episode of Star Trek Lower Decks Room for Growth focuses on. Star Trek's Lower Decks showrunner Mike McMahon shares some of the influences behind this episode. This is where things get kind of interesting. This was partially based on the room lottery that happened in my college, McMahon says with a laugh. Everybody was frantic about it every year, and there were always rumors about ways to game the system. Of course, this type of concept isn't new to Star Trek. The Kobayashi Maru is the ultimate touchstone that fans will always harken back to for ways to game systems in this franchise. There are also notes of classic Star Trek episode The Ultimate Computer, as well as defeating the Borg in Star Trek The Next Generation's classic two-parter, The Best of Both Worlds. These episodes easily demonstrate a concept that has long been a Starfleet tradition. So changing some code in a terminal to get better quarters is definitely the Starfleet way. Are you agreeing with this, Amy?
Wow, that is pretty cool. You know, as they're talking about like The Ultimate Computer, The Best of Both Worlds, or... you know, just sort of those sneaky ways to, yeah, game the system.
Yeah, I found that very interesting. But this is where things for me really picked up interesting. There's one particular and surprising non-Trek influence in this episode as well. McMahon went on to say, this episode was also inspired by Stand By Me, he says, referring to the 1986 Rob Reiner movie based on a Stephen King novella. I wanted to do a story so badly where the journey was more important than the destination. The Lower Deckers right now are good friends, so a lot of Lower Deck episodes should thematically be all about friendships. Unfortunately, Rutherford is on his own side of the story, laughing. The journey, though, through the bowels of the Cerritos is about that journey. The plant room was kind of like when the kids in Stand By Me are going through the swamp area with the leeches, McMahon says. Then the next room sort of had a Willy Wonka vibe to it, the anti-gravity room. And all of these were mini coming-of-age adventures. The ship is so big and there can be all this stuff inside of it, but it's still just one ship and they're all going to different places. So it really is about the journey and not the destination.
Wow. Okay. I am so glad that you found this. And now it's like the episode actually makes more sense because it was just like room after room after room that they were going through. And it is the journey. Oh my gosh. I love this.
Yeah. I think it's some very valid points. Unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to watch if there's been any no more Lower Decks for these episodes, because I would be really curious to see what Will Wheaton would think about this.
Oh yeah, the ready room. Yeah.
Yeah, the ready room. So yeah, I would be very curious at this point if Will Wheaton has any if he heard this, what he would say about this, because obviously there's a few Star Trek ties to Stand By Me here, but obviously Will Wheaton being the biggest one. What's funny is I just watched Stand By Me maybe about a week and a half ago. It was on cable and I caught it right as it was starting. And I'm like, you know what? I haven't watched this for a while. I love this movie. Mm-hmm. And I think it is one of those classic friendship journey. I think it's one of the best friendship journey movies we've had. But yeah, when you think about it after reading this, this very much is a very similar tale. It's not about them going to fix the room lottery. It's about them growing their friendship even more. And there's a lot of that in Lower Decks. When you go back and think about it, the main theme of Lower Decks is the building of this friendship of this core four group. And I truly do believe it's probably the best Star Trek example of this many characters. We've always had two or three. We've never had really four, though, where they've really brought that group in tight together. And I think that it's because it's animated, because of it's a different type of format, they're able to, I think, have a little bit more flexibility to do that. But yeah, Star Trek has that history of great friendships. And I got to say, The Lower Decks crew, core crew here, is definitely climbing up that friendship pairing ladder for me.
Yeah, I agree with you. And as you were talking, you just like stole my mind's mind there that you must have mind-melded.
We had a little Vulcan mind meld there.
Yes. But yeah, and to have it be a friendship of four, like we haven't seen that. And usually in pairs, you know, Beverly and Troy and, you know, Data and Geordi. So I like that it's the four, and I like that they keep, You know, like this week was three with Rutherford off. The previous week, Tendi was the one off. Like they keep doing these unique pairings and unique groupings, but we're still getting a unified friendship.
Yeah, they're doing a phenomenal job with it. And again, we've talked about this many a time, how much this show has changed and evolved from what it first started off as. And again, it's a credit to the writing team. It's a credit to Mike McMahon. It's a credit to everybody involved with this that they have morphed this show into what it has become. And I think it's absolutely wonderful. But I do have a few trivia things coming out of this episode too, Amy. Boimler makes the claim, fortune favors the bold. Captain Benjamin Sisko said the same thing before the battle to retake Deep Space Nine from the Dominion in an episode of the same name.
Yep, I did catch that. I didn't get the Sisko thing, but I was like, ooh, that is something. So good job for reminding me.
Do you want to see Bold Boimler stay around for a little bit more to see if, you know, do you think we're building something with that where he's going to get himself in a really bad situation because of Bold Boimler?
Well, I think it will get him in a bad situation, but it will also get him out. And with him wanting to get into command, we have to see it. Otherwise, he goes nowhere.
Yeah, I agree. This is kind of fun for you animation fans out here. The Delta Shift characters are drawn the same as Beta Shift, just with different hair and skin colors.
I thought they looked familiar. Yeah. I really did. And it was actually the height of them. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that looks the same.
Yeah. And Amy, just for you, the mask situation at the opening is a reference to Star Trek The Next Generation masks.
Of course.
If you go listen to the newest episode of All Good Things, you're going to learn even more. Was it All Good Things or Galaxy Class? I've got too many
podcasts. All Good Things. Yeah, it was part of our Transfiguration series.
So there you go. Now, Amy, before we get out of here and wrap up this mission, do you have any other thoughts or things that we may not have covered from this episode that stand out for you or anything just in general that now that we're already going to be close to the halfway point of season three of Lower Decks already?
It flies by. It does. It flies by. And it's like, I am enjoying them so much and I enjoy the conversation and everyone's picking out different things. Like, that's what I love about Lower Decks. Like, you can find the craziest little things and you really do need to watch it again and again because you're going to pick up different things and little Easter eggs that, you know, drop in your lap. I sort of feel like these two, I'm glad that we're talking about them together, like with this competition and the camaraderie. And one other thing I did want to talk about that both of these episodes do very well is finding the silver lining. Like they wanted to get the room, but oh, we like being together. So we're okay that we didn't get the room. We want to, you know, do better than the California ship. And oh, but they sort of admired us and it sort of worked out okay. Like there's these silver linings that I'm finding you can recognize if you are in a safe friendship of group of people. And I like that they're building that family and that they're exploring that because I like having that perspective change when you are a happier person. Because remember season one, Mariner, like things were going bad, 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 bad. And she had a bad attitude. Now things like go bad, but then go really right.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, Amy. I really do like that. But we're going to teleport out of this away mission. Get to some final thoughts because I have something I want to bring up. I need your opinion on, Amy. So, Amy, I've come to the realization of something as I've been watching Strange New Worlds, Lower Decks. And I also have been watching the latest Marvel show on Disney Plus, the She-Hulk show. And there's a trend I'm seeing happening, which is something that I'm actually very glad for. We're getting more shows that emphasize the fun of our fandoms. I feel like, you know, with both Picard and with Discovery, there's been a darkness to those shows. Even with Q being in season two, there's been a heaviness and a darkness to those shows. And even and with a lot of things lately. And it's, and I think it's even more too, so because of the, what's happening in our real world around us with everything just feeling so heavy and so stressful and so tiring. You know, it feels like in ways, in one way or another, we all feel like we're carrying a weight of some kind. But when I get into Strange New Worlds and Lower Decks, or like I said, She-Hulk on the Marvel side, it's so nice to sit down for half an hour, 45 minutes, and it's just pure fun. And even with Strange New Worlds, when they had a little bit more serious episode, you still had this fun factor to it. There was something, I don't know if it's the cast or whatever, there was just always a felt of a lightheartedness to it. I need more of this in my fandoms, Amy, and I need more of this on my televisions. And I think Lower Decks, for me right now, is probably the closest thing to emphasizing pure fun in a fandom right now. It's so well done, and it's something I look forward to, just that half an hour of just sitting there and enjoying Lower Decks every week.
You know, I have to agree with you, and I feel that Lower Decks is currently my warm blanket. And as you were talking, it's like, yeah, watching Lower Decks, it is the fun, it is the comfort, it is the blanket, in part because of so many callbacks to classic TNG DS9. So I'm getting those, and one thing that really makes it feel like a warm blanket is when they choose music. The last episode, when they were talking about, we didn't get the room, but we like being together, the music from TNG comes through, and it just, I sit back and I'm like, all is right with the world. I feel safe, comfortable, secure. Just that's what Lower Decks does. And it's the music, it's those tropes of the friendships, the themes. It's so good. And Lower Decks, you're right, is unique in that way. Prodigy is brand new. There's some Voyager tie-ins, but it's different. And the darkness of Discovery and Picard is for real. So I agree with you there.
Yeah, I think Prodigy, because we've still only had a limited amount of episodes, and there is a heaviness to the plot of Prodigy right now. I think the characters are lighthearted, but they're not the fun like Lower Decks is. They're fun in their own unique way, and I'm really excited for the return of Prodigy. I'm looking very much forward to that, but I still think it's fun in its own unique way. And you talk about the music beats. I go back to episode 2 when they went, or no, actually the first episode when they went to Montana, and we hear the First Contact music and everything like that. Lower Decks just, it has such an amazing sense of itself and what it builds off of. I think more than any other Star Trek show that's been made ever. I truly do believe that. You can say what you will about Enterprise, you can say about Voyager and everything, but Lower Decks just, it nails it in every way. And where I know it's still not everybody's cup of tea, and I get that, but I just think if you're a Star Trek fan, there's something you can pull, even if you're not a fan of every episode, there's something you can pull out of it. There's a moment you can pull out of every episode of Lower Decks that's come out. I truly do believe that. Agreed. It still might not be your favorite thing, but there's still some moment that you can pull out and get a little bit of a chuckle out of or a laugh out of.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just how I feel. And I really hope, talk about a show that I wish we got 20 episodes of.
Yeah.
I know I couldn't do that to the poor animators right now. They probably all hearing this and going, no, you can stop now. I mean, I feel so bad for how much the VFX people are getting worked right now, because there's so much of things using VFX, but yeah, I wish we got 20 episodes a season of Lower Decks, but I'll take whatever I can get of that nice warm blanket, Amy. So
yeah,
with that, it's time to close up this episode of Union Federation, which means it's time for a little subspace signals. And of course, there's a lot of great ways you can find the Union Federation podcast. It all starts, of course, on the master feed of the Fandom Podcast Network, fpnet.podbean.com. Of course, you can also watch the video versions of our show on our Fandom Podcast Network YouTube channel. Go to YouTube, search for the Fandom Podcast Network, subscribe, share it, give it a like. We love your input. We love having you guys take a part in the show, whether we're doing a live show or you guys leave us comments. Because, again, we're striving to make the best podcasts and videos to feed your ears and keep you entertained and have some fun. Of course, you can also find the Fandom Podcast Network on iTunes, Spotify, all your major podcast catchers. And you can also find the Union Federation on the BQN network. Amy, you guys are busy over there. Every time I turn around, there's something new, Trek, coming out on BQN.
We do have a lot of fun over there. So yeah, you can subscribe just to Union Federation. You can subscribe to All Good Things, which I also co-host, which talks about just general Star Trek. And we like talking about all this different series. I am also co-hosting Galaxy Class, which is specifically for Next Generation. I'm on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson. And in our Facebook group.
Now, Amy, I do want you to tell you have a new show over on the BQN network. What's the tea, Bev? And I just want you to tell the host of that he was not allowed to steal all of our tea replicator recipes over here. We shot him how to use the StreamYard. I didn't say he could access the replicator.
He's got all the tea over there.
definitely, that he has his own little Starfleet tea party going on over there. There's more tea than the Boston Tea Party. That's all I'm saying. But there's also, of course, if you want to contact us directly, you can email us at theunionfederation@gmail.com. You can follow us on social media at Union Fed Podcast. You can follow the BQN at BQN Podcast. Of course, you can follow Amy at Miss Amy Nelson on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at AKyleW or on Instagram at AKyleFandom. You can follow Mr. Reitzel, even though I know he's a little down in the dumps after his favorite football team lost a heartbreaker of a game today. But we're here for you, Kevin. We love you. And of course, happy birthday to him. It was his birthday over the weekend. He was in his natural habitat of finding physical media over the weekend as well. So he was a happy camper there. You can find him on Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix. And of course, our amazing ship science officer will hopefully be back soon. She's off in Med Bay right now, but we're sending out all the good healing vibes. And I think Amy may have snuck her some underground Romulan ale. I don't know, you know. But you can find Haley at Trekkie01D on Twitter as well. Of course, check out the BQN, like I said, at BQN Podcast on Twitter and Instagram or on their Facebook page, the BQN Collective. They will assimilate you. Mm-hmm. But they will make it a good assimilation, not one of those bad ones. You're going to have fun. Of course, looking ahead to our Orb of Prophecy, we'll be continuing our look at Lower Decks with episodes 5 and 6. The time is flying by. And then, of course, in October, Star Trek's Prodigy Season 1, Part 2 will start October 27th, 2022. We will be getting Star Trek Picard February 16th, 2023. And at some time soon, we will find out when Discovery Season 5 and Strange New World Season 2 will be part of our programming for Union Federation and our continuing missions. And hopefully, sometime soon, maybe we'll actually get some Orville news, too. We're keeping those fingers crossed. That was one other thing, just real quick. I noticed they pulled a little Orville joke in Lower Decks this week. Amy, did you catch that?
No, what was it?
When they mentioned having to cut off and regrow a foot.
Oh my gosh, that is hysterical. Okay, come on, Mike McMahon. Oh, and Seth MacFarlane, I'm loving it.
So, yeah, no, I caught that. I was like, yeah, I know where they got that one from.
That's nice.
But until next time, it has been, of course, a pleasure to man the Union Federation ship with you, Amy, as it always is. And we are looking forward to having Kevin and Haley return. And, you know, tell some of your PQN people. I need them over here. I need some new ensigns to beat up on, you know? Somebody's got to clean up the tribbles. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, triple
duty. I mean, sorry, guys, you got to earn it. But with that, I want to thank everybody for listening. All you listeners out there are the reason we do this, and we love you guys. Until next time, hailing frequencies are now closed.